This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
And a good morning to you. It is Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Hey, coming up this hour, we got the good, the bad, and the dumb. Still processing last night's blowout win by Baylor, crushing Gonzaga to win their first ever men's basketball championship. Lost in maybe the shuffle a little bit. It did make news, but, I mean, it was college basketball was so dominated with last night's game. Hubert Davis is going to replace Roy Williams at North Carolina. He played at North Carolina. But here's his quote, which I think is just, this is incredible. This is what he said when he asked him about Chapel Hill. He said, "I love this university. I played here. I earned my degree here. I fell in love with my wife here. I got married here. I moved here after I retired from the NBA, and I've raised my kids here. I'm proud to lead this team, and I can't wait for all that comes next." You know, sometimes you pick the location and then the job follows. That's what happened here. Like, if he really wanted to be a head coach under Roy Williams at any point under the 9 years that he was with Williams on the bench, he would have had to get rid of all of what I just mentioned. He'd have to be like, "Well, I love Chapel Hill, but I got to go. I'm going off to wherever." But now he gets to be the head coach in this town that he loves the most, the place he's so familiar with, he's called it home. This is what we talk about sometimes. Listen, I think schools should go after the best possible person for the job, but I'm not stupid enough to not know that sometimes in the family is a good way to go. North Carolina is going in the family. They went with it with Roy Williams, and they're going with it now. Now we'll see where this goes with Hubert Davis taking over the reins of the Tar Heels. He gets the program, he gets the Roy Williams way, and after 18 seasons at North Carolina, he'll be trying to pick up where Williams left off. Remember, even though there were some down times for North Carolina basketball, it wasn't that long ago that they won the national championship, 2017, beating Gonzaga, who lost last night to Baylor. All right, good, the bad, and the dumb coming up next as we roll along at Sports Map Radio. Thanks for joining us. This is Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. So we continue.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb here on a Tuesday, and let's get the good of the day.
Oh, you know we got a good of the day. The good of the day, Aaron Rodgers is hosting Jeopardy.
I know. Did he do a good job?
Well, he did do a good job. I will give him this, but we come to Final Jeopardy. A contestant, I don't think he knew the answer, or he didn't know the question to the answer.
Right.
Jeopardy always confuses me in that way. Everyone understands that. So he decided to pull a fast one on Aaron Rodgers.
Nice.
And just ask a random question and not bet any money. So... Here's his question.
Scott, did you come up with the correct response? Who wanted to kick that field goal? That is a great question. Should be correct, but unfortunately for this game today, that's incorrect, and you're going to lose 0.
That's hilarious. I wonder how many old people in like Peoria were like, what does that mean? What is that? Why didn't he
just
guess?
Non-sports people like, what does he mean? Who wanted to kick that field goal?
Who is Catherine of Aragon? Why didn't he write that? That's awesome.
I just love it. I mean,
that's great.
But other than that, you know, I watched a few of the highlights. I mean, you know, when he first came out, he did a short little monologue talking about Alex Trebek, which I think all these guest hosts have been doing.
Yeah.
And then he just got right to it. And, you know, I think he did a great job. He might have, there might be another career.
Is he? Okay. if he's done with football in a couple of years, is like, was he good enough to do that job? Like, is he good?
Well, is he good enough to be like? It's a different type of game show host, isn't it?
I always feel like Aaron Rodgers is not a television personality, like a game show host.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, I mean, okay.
can I say something? Let me say this about Aaron Rodgers, and I don't mean this in a negative way. When Alex Trebek, but I mean to Aaron Rodgers. So let's say you're a school teacher from Minneapolis and you go on Jeopardy, and you like Alex Trebek goes, and Mike, you're a school teacher from Minneapolis. What do you teach? And he goes, I teach sixth grade calculus or whatever, right? Whatever it is. And he goes, that's great. He feels like Alex Trebek is like, I love that. I'm interested. Does Aaron Rodgers give you that same thing?
Does he have that gear in him?
Like, does he go, all right, it says here you're a teacher. That must be great, I guess. It's not quarterback great, but I guess it's awesome. Let's go to Sally. What do? I don't really care. Well, just tell me real quick. We work at a plant? Great. Wonderful. Let's go to you, Joanne. What do? Housewife? Great. Even better. Let's go. Let's play the game. Like, it doesn't feel like Aaron Rodgers is a warm person to care about the contestants that, you know, like Alex Trebek and Pat Sajak seem to at least show they do.
Yeah.
Even though the back of their mind's like, I couldn't
tell less. I think the one thing that Aaron Rodgers does have that Alex Trebek had was that, you know, the snarky, hey, I know the answer.
Yeah, okay.
Response, you know, where, you remember, Alex was great at it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just made you feel like a dumb, you know what, for not knowing. You didn't know that this is the Treaty of Versailles?
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Exactly. Come on.
Yeah, I thought that was common knowledge. It's common knowledge for us Canadians.
It's Constantinople. Constantinople. All right. Go ahead. Pick again. Yeah, there was a clip that was when Aaron Rodgers was a celebrity on Jeopardy, and the category was greats or something, or conquer or something. And they acted like Aaron Rodgers was some sort of Rhodes Scholar for running through the category. And I hate to say this, but because I'm not the sharpest knife in the drawer, I got all those answers.
Well,
like, they weren't exactly super difficult.
Well, then why weren't you on Celebrity Jeopardy?
I don't know.
Aren't you a celebrity?
One was Custer. One was Alexander the Great. I mean, these were like simplistic.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they weren't that hard. But hey, look, I'm glad. Rolf Benerska one time hosted Wheel of Fortune, former San Diego Chargers kicker. I'm all for former athletes getting into the game show biz.
Might, you know, could be.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's that good. I don't know how he is compared to the other ones because I haven't really been watching Jeopardy.
Yeah.
But I got to imagine, you know, I mean, as far as celebrity status, as far as, you know, getting eyes on the program, which, you know, that's all they care about
in the
first place.
That's all they care about, sure. That's right.
Aaron Rodgers might be the ticket. I don't know. Yeah. We'll see. We'll have to wait and see, but good on that guy to just go out and say,
hey, that's awesome.
Who wanted to kick that field goal?
That's great. That's great. All right, what's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day, I think this might be a recurring theme. We might be talking about this team in the bat of the day a couple of times throughout the course of the year, and that's the Astros. The Astros were playing against the Angels last night. They ended up losing. They did not score more runs than the Astros or the Angels, so that's a first for them. But the bat of the day is the amount of trash cans that kept being thrown down onto the field.
They got to cut this out. This is not good. I don't like it. Like, I don't mind the booing. I don't mind the signs.
Yeah.
But stop. You can't throw stuff on the field.
It started off with an inflatable trash can, which somebody brought in and had fun. Sure. Okay. You know, inflatable trash can. Ha ha. That's fun. But then people actually decided, you know, let's throw actual trash cans.
Yeah, that's not
so
good.
Security officials had to kind of sit at the fence to stop people from throwing trash onto the field.
Yeah, they got it. Again, I'm boo all you want, scream, yell, hold up signs. You can even do those, you know, cheating songs like they had the Carrie Underwood song in Oakland. That's all good.
Yeah, or
that's
Oakland,
fine.
Oakland played Ace of Base. I saw the sign.
Right. That's all good. Have fun with it that way. Do not throw stuff on the field. I don't like that.
Well, because, you know, first of all, you're not going to get it far enough.
No.
To hit anybody or to make a real impact. And I felt bad. You'll see the video over and over and over again if you're cruising YouTube or cruising, you know, watching your favorite sports channel. I feel bad for that security guard. The guy to get out there, he picks up the trash can. Now he's picking up trash on the field, and it's like, you know, not very COVID friendly, if you ask me.
Yeah, we don't like the only thing we will let you do in sports is we'll let you throw hats onto the ice. When somebody gets a hat trick
or
in the NHL.
Is it Nashville that does fish?
Yeah, they do a catfish.
A catfish?
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of gross.
It is gross.
Catfish. Well, who does? Isn't there somebody that does, anyway, like, bears? Like, every once in a while, they'll do, like, a bear giveaway.
Oh, teddy bear? Right? Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of minor league teams that do that. They'll do a teddy bear drive, and they'll say, like, when we score our first goal,
throw a teddy
and
bear.
And then the other team's in on it, too, so they know, like, hey, look, when the light lamp, we're
we
throwing
like
teddy
that.
Bears. We're going to go pick them up, and everything's going to be awesome.
Quick question. Yeah. All right, I know it's customary to throw a hat on for a hat trick. Would you ever do it?
Because
chances are I'm wearing a hat that I like.
I
wear a hat pretty much every single day.
And, I mean, hats are expensive.
Yeah.
Like, they're not cheap anymore. Like, when I was a kid, getting a hat was like $5.
I don't know if first of all, I don't have to worry about that problem because there's no hockey team in Houston. But if I was to go to a hockey game, I think I would just bring a hat that I don't care about.
Yeah, in case
happens.
It's like when I was a kid, I brought my glove to the Fenway Park in case a ball was coming my way. I wanted to catch it.
Yeah, I would watch that and be like, why would I want to throw a hat? And then, you know, furthermore, you know, for you people in Nashville, kudos on you for bringing catfish to the game and then going home with it.
Right. Catfish.
I mean, how many trash cans are filled with catfish on the way out the door? Like, oh, you know, this was a waste of money. And just toss it because you can't do anything with it, right?
You can't do anything with it, yeah.
It's been sitting out. I mean, I know it's cold in the building, but still.
Yeah. Actually, I think the catfish is for the playoff, first goal playoff game, not a hat trick. So I think it's the first goal in the playoff game. It's like the octopus in Detroit.
Yeah. You just happen to be. Do you have to smuggle that in or do you tell security? Yeah, I got a catfish in my pocket.
I've been asking this question for a long time because when I was at UNH, they used to throw fish on the ice after a goal. And the guy who used to bring the fish in would have it under his jacket. And I'm like, have we all caught on that you're the guy that brings the fish to throw on the ice in the game that's not supposed to happen?
NFL, I mean, think about it. The NFL, for women, you have to. The bag is like 6 inches wide. It's got to be clear.
Yeah,
you can't smuggle anything in.
Bring fish in.
You can bring fish and octopus.
Yeah. All right. What's the dumb of the day?
I'm gonna play two cuts for you real quick. All right.
All right.
All right. So listen to cut one. So that's cut one.
All right.
I'm going to play you cut two.
Well, you know, I got no idea. I got nothing to say. It's all wrong. And I like to get on going.
All right. So this is the same song?
So, no, these aren't the same songs. This is from a project called Lost Tapes of the 27 Club.
Okay.
And basically, they're recreating music from dead artists. And why this is dumb is that first cut was an AI version of Kurt Cobain.
Okay.
And that second cut was an AI version of Amy Winehouse. They pretty much populate...
This is artificial intelligence?
This is artificial intelligence singing.
Those aren't real bands?
Those aren't real bands.
Computer generated that?
Computer generated that and the voices.
All right. What are we doing?
They use
That was a computer So that computer
knew
how...
There's no human involvement in those music at all.
That computer knew how Kurt Cobain sang and what his voice was like and then recreated that song.
Yes.
And the same thing with Amy Winehouse.
And those songs were never sung by those artists. This is a brand new song
that they created. This is where it gets scary. This is when they're talking about like when you have if you want to get rid of like a political figure or something, you can just have them at a speech. Like you can have them giving a terrible, awful speech in front of people where it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Right. Like you can have them saying things he never said or all that stuff. That's where this gets dangerous. I mean, if you get Kurt Cobain singing a song he never sang, and it sounds exactly like Kurt Cobain singing that song, that's dangerous, man.
Yeah, their thing, the Lost Tapes of the 27 Club, the project, aims to highlight the massive cultural loss stemming from the premature deaths of iconic artists. No, no, no.
No, no.
No, let's let it be.
Let the work be what it is.
There's, you know, sayings like, yeah, we could do Jim Morrison. We could do Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
We could do Janis Joplin. It's like, then we don't need
that. We don't need them. Nobody's asking for this.
Yes.
Nobody wants. No. They had their moment. What makes their moment great is they gave us a lot. They tragically died, but what they gave us is special.
Yeah.
Like, we don't need more. Like, we just enjoy, like, we mourn the loss of these great, talented people, but we enjoy what they gave in their art.
And completely scary when you hear these things, and you're going, my God, does that...
Like, if I'm a fan of Jackson Pollock paintings, I don't need a computer to replicate the way he splashed the paint all over the canvas. And then say, look, you can have more Jackson Pollock. Look at the way our computer... blasted through that. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. It doesn't sound completely like him,
but
it's enough. It's close enough, and it's enough to make me feel uncomfortable.
Scary thing is, like, 40 years from now, kids will be, you know, kids of that generation will be like, yeah, and then Kurt Cobain did this, this, and this, and this after he died.
Yeah.
Right? Be wild. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're looking to confirm somebody to talk Jets trading Sam Darnold to Carolina in 12 minutes. I was still processing Baylor's win last night. What a dominating performance by the Bears. Didn't lead us to a game that had like a sort of edge of your seat outcome. No, instead you got Baylor dominating a team that people didn't think could be dominated. So as I've been saying all morning, there's just two ways to look at this. You can be disappointed, and I think a lot of us are, that we got this big heavyweight pre-fight, right, between these two teams. 1-1, they were 1-2 in the rankings all year. What would it be like if they played? And then, yeah, you could be disappointed it didn't live up to what we thought it was, but you can also then take a step back and appreciate what Baylor did in this game and the way they played, the way they out-rebounded, they outshot, they were passing the ball great, they knew where they were supposed to go, they defended well. Gonzaga's 70 points was the lowest they scored all year. Like, it was just a complete, you know, beatdown of a fantastic team. And sometimes that's, you know, that's worthy enough of our attention. But that's not really what we were looking for. We weren't looking for one of these teams to dominate. At least I wasn't. I don't know how many of you guys were. But we weren't, you know, if you were just settling in going, I just want a good basketball game, you didn't really get one. But you did get a game where, because Gonzaga is so good, that you were wondering, how in the end will this come about? I think the Baylor story is fantastic. I think what Scott Drew has done, lifting that program from the depths of awfulness, especially with the murder of one player murdering another player, and then Dave Bliss covering up that scandal with another scandal on top of another scandal, really left the program in complete disarray. And Scott Drew was willing to take a chance on the program and himself. That was the key, right? I mean, again, we've seen guys go to programs, let me just get here for a little bit till I get my resume up and running, till I get my name and my brand up and running, and then my people will sell me to openings across the country and I can get out of this place. He didn't want to get out of this place. 2003, I mean, in coaching language, is a long time. That was a long time ago. No, it, you know, it really is. I mean, it's almost 20 years. It's 18 years, but that's a long time for a coach to not have the resume of like a Roy Williams or like a Mike Krzyzewski or a Jim Boeheim or Bill Self or any of these guys that have been in a program for a very, very long time. I mean, 2003, you know, when he arrived at Baylor, Carmelo Anthony was just coming off a win at Syracuse, winning the national championship. I mean, that's how long ago that was. So good for him. And now the attention will be on Mark Few of whether or not Gonzaga can cut down the nets eventually. Now, is Gonzaga hurt by their conference? People like to make that connection. I don't necessarily think so. This was one game they couldn't win, right? If Gonzaga consistently got to the tournament, and while they were in the tournament, they're like, man, we don't play teams like this, we're out, then you would say, hey, you know, it's too bad you play in the West Coast Conference that doesn't give you the kind of competition that this tournament will give you. but that's just the way it is. Gonzaga's gone to the finals twice. They lost to North Carolina and Baylor, but they were they were one of the top teams in the country. You know, college basketball is ranked in a lot of different ways. I mean, look, you know, we don't like computers in college football. We didn't like the BCS formula. You know, we got a bunch of people in a room kind of evaluating college football for us. We've got SIDs voting for coaches, and we got AP writers. Those are the three polls. That's the way we evaluate college football. But when it comes to college basketball, we have AP writers, we have coaches / SIDs, but then KenPom, you've got the net rankings. I mean, you've got a lot of different systems that really take in a lot of analytics. And Gonzaga wasn't some team that we just felt should be good, so we just gave them the number one team ranking. I mean, they were so talented, so incredibly talented and well-coached. This was a surprise. You know, so this isn't the narrative of, yeah, well, we should have seen it. Baylor plays in the Big 12, and Gonzaga plays in that weak conference they beat up every single year. No, this was a great outcome for Baylor in that they dominated a team nobody dominates. Nobody dominated. Now, do I think Gonzaga loses a few games if they had played a full non-conference slate amongst teams like Baylor, like a team that they were supposed to play and didn't, or if they did schedule that game against Kentucky that John Calipari said was in the works? Possibly. Preseason, you know, non-conference slates in November and December have a weird way of sort of playing out. But it wasn't a team that just finally was exposed. That's not it. Nobody is saying that, but I don't want people to think that Baylor winning this game was something we could have seen if we read the tea leaves. No, we shouldn't have seen if we read the tea leaves. This was a great performance by a Baylor team that's finally national champions in college basketball. Now, as far as this tournament goes, and I know we've talked about this before, now it's over, right? Baylor is the champs of a very bizarre college basketball tournament. All played in the state of Indiana. COVID conditions, bubble format. We didn't even know if we'd have it. Some of us were nervous. I'm in that camp. We're nervous about, okay, it has been a season. And I kid you not, if you followed college basketball this season, go to any date of college basketball and you will see a handful of games, if not a ton of games, that were canceled, postponed, done because of COVID. It affected almost every team in college basketball at some point, either within their organization or opponents that they were scheduled to face and they unfortunately couldn't play because of the virus. Now, when you get to this tournament and you've got 64 teams and 63 games plus the four play-in games, so you got 67 games, all of a sudden one was affected. That's incredible. That's incredible. Obviously, it would have been more incredible if zero were affected, but that's amazing that we had one game that was altered because of COVID. And luckily, we had it enough that in the beginning. So it wasn't crazy that it happened. It
didn't have a serious impact on the outcome of the tournament.
Right, exactly. So it wasn't a Sweet 16 matchup. We didn't have to send UCLA home before they played Michigan, right? Like, we didn't have to do that. The matchups that started to matter for this tournament was starting to shape the way this was going got played. So, and I said this last week, and I'll say it again, I am really hoping that we as an American sports culture don't asterisk this thing. I don't mind if it's remembered as being different. I don't even mind if it's remembered as a COVID tournament, pandemic tournament, where special circumstance. I don't care about that. I don't want us to look at Baylor as a different national champion than Villanova, than North Carolina, than UConn, right? Than Virginia, than anybody else that won when we were all over the country for the first couple of rounds, gathering in one awesome location. I think that Baylor should never be remembered as a team that went through that pandemic tournament. They should be remembered as the 2021 national champs because they did earn it.
listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Sam Darnold traded to the Carolina Panthers for draft picks. From the Jets' point of view, what's it all about? Let's go to the Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Tyler Greenewalt joins us from Jets Wire of USA Today. How are you, Tyler?
I'm doing well this morning, Tony. Thanks for having me. How are you?
All right, good. So the haul the Jets got, too much, too little, about right? Where do you see what the Jets got for the guy that was once the third overall pick?
I think it's exactly what they could get at the time. I don't think he was ever... I don't think Joe Douglas is ever going to get a first-round pick for Sam Darnold. I think getting a second-round pick next year and a fourth next year coupled with the sixth this year is, I mean, that's a sensational haul for a quarterback who was never going to start for the Jets this year. I think they did as well as they could, and now they can think about the future.
Was it surprising that the Carolina Panthers were willing to pull a trigger on a deal knowing that, well, let the Jets pick their quarterback and have Sam Darnold there? We can get him much less when that happens.
Maybe, but they also don't know who else was vying for Darnold. Apparently, like, the Broncos were interested. There could have been another team as well out there. So I think they have to make this deal now just to ensure that they can lock their guy in. And it sounds like he's going to be sticking around for at least another year because they reportedly picked up his option as well. So I think it was the right move for them. It sounded like it was heating up over right after Zach Wilson's pro day. So they did what they had to do to get it done.
Give us some of the obstacles that Darnold has had. We know about coaching and players and injuries and mono and all that. Give us an idea, though, the 3 years that he was there, just all of the things that were working against Darnold's success in New York.
I think a lot of it just had to do with there was no level of comfort for him ever, both physically on the field and just mentally with what was going on with the team. He had three offensive coordinators, two different head coaches, no real skill position players available, no real offensive line. It was just a combination of bad things given to this young quarterback that never really allowed him to break out. He had flashes of brilliance. He had some sensational plays here and there, but it was never really enough for the Jets with a new head coaching regime, basically a whole new roster to look at him and be like, we'll give him another shot, rather than just look at the tape and see what was available. It was just, they never gave him enough weapons as well. Like, I think they got Breshad Perriman after letting Robbie Anderson go. They got Le'Veon Bell, but didn't get an offensive line to protect either of them well. So it was just a combination of a lot of different things, and Adam Gase didn't help at all either, which I think we all know about.
You know, a lot of organizations don't like to admit they made a mistake, especially kind of early in a guy's career, but none of the people that made this decision are there anymore. So when was the writing on the wall that this new group of people that were going to run the Jets just weren't going to have Sam Darnold in their plans?
I think as soon as they decided to let Adam Gase go, that was sort of Joe Douglas signaling to everyone that this was going to be a different regime without everyone that was in place beforehand. He can talk about how they were thinking about keeping Darnold even with drafting a quarterback, or thinking about keeping Darnold and not drafting a quarterback. I don't believe that was ever actually on the table. You see it. You saw it with the Rams and Goff. You saw it with the Cardinals and Josh Rosen a couple of years ago. When you have a new regime, it only makes sense to just start from scratch. You get a clean slate. You can evaluate everyone on the same level. I think as soon as they made the decision not to keep Gase, which I don't think they ever were not going to, I don't think you can look at Darnold's tape and be like, yeah, it was only Gase's fault that he didn't play as well as he could have the past 2 years.
Yeah, so how do you process where Sam Darnold is right now? The inconsistent play, but is Carolina getting a rebuilding project here that may actually work for them? Is he still capable of being an NFL-level starter?
Yeah, I think the two things that are working really well for Darnold are that, one, he is incredibly young and very malleable from a developmental standpoint. So that is key. And also just look at the skill position players. Look at the offensive line in Carolina. Look at the coach, Matt Rhule. Like, Matt Rhule was almost the Jets head coach before they chose Gase.
Yeah.
When they had Darnold. So, like, he is at least somewhat familiar. Reunites Darnold with Robbie Anderson, who was his favorite receiver with the Jets. They have Christian McCaffrey. I think this is a significantly better situation that will allow the Panthers to sort of decide, okay, did we get the number three overall pick in 2018 that everyone thought was the savior of New York, or did we just commit? I think then they picked up this option. It's like $23 million over 2 years. Did we just commit this much money to a quarterback, which in the grand scheme of things isn't that big of a commitment. So I think from their point of view, it's a very medium risk, high reward potential, considering they probably knew that they weren't going to be able to get a quarterback in the draft this year after the 49ers moved up. Deshaun Watson is completely off the table now. And I think this was really the best cheap move that the Panthers could make just to see what they have in him. And I think they have enough talent around Darnold to make him a viable starter in the NFL.
From the buzz that's going around, obviously things can happen over the next couple of weeks. It feels like through the media and everybody's buzzing about Zach Wilson at BYU. Is that where you feel the Jets are leaning with that second pick?
I think where there's a lot of smoke, there's definitely some fire. I wouldn't envision them. The only other quarterback I could see them picking would be Justin Fields, and there's been almost no reports or no reported interest outside of Joe Douglas going to Justin Fields' pro day. I think for all intents and purposes, it sounds like Wilson's going to be the pick. I don't necessarily think it's a bad pick. I think him and Justin Fields both have the pros and cons. They're both equally talented prospects for different reasons. I think Zach Wilson fits the offensive scheme that the Jets are going to set up. I just think everyone's saying it's Wilson. I wouldn't see any other way why it wouldn't be.
What's the buzz about the picks? The Jets have a ton of them coming up at the end of this month. What's the buzz about what they'll do with some of them? Will they use all of them? Will they package some of them? What's at least any rumblings about what they'll do with that?
I mean, I could definitely see Joe Douglas trading out of some of his later picks just because he loves flexibility in the draft. He loves being able to create, to build through the draft. I think what he did in the offseason kind of pointed to what he would do in the draft. He didn't sign a cornerback outside of Justin Hardy, who is more special teams than cornerback. He didn't really get any good offensive linemen outside of depth pieces. He went for defensive end. He went for Carl Lawson, Vinnie Curry. He went for receiver. So I think it kind of signals that like he's going to go cornerback or offensive line early, just because those are the two biggest areas of needs that the Jets don't have. Potentially even running back down the road, even though they signed Tevin Coleman, their running back group is pretty mediocre at best. So I think it's going to be obviously quarterback first, and then the next two picks at pick 23 and 34, I would imagine one of those two would be cornerback, the other one would be offensive lineman. But it could easily be two cornerbacks, it could be two offensive linemen. I just think those are the two most important needs, and those are the two positions he's going to go with after a quarterback.
When you hear from Jet fans, and when you write something and they respond to it, or when you get a feeling for Darnold, do Jet fans understand his predicament? Do they blame him for the failures of the team over the last couple of years? Is it a little mixture of both? What's the overall fan perception of Darnold's time with the Jets?
I think a lot of fans are angry at the organization and Adam Gase still, but I still see a lot of people who blame Darnold because they think of the ghost game.
Yeah.
They think of all the injuries. They see his play on the field, and they don't necessarily understand if it's all him, if it's all coaching. It's usually a mixture of both. So I think fans are probably happy to see Darnold move on. I think some fans are just happy to see him get a new opportunity based off of what they saw from him earlier. I think most fans are just happy that Gase is gone. That's kind of where everyone was.
And yeah.
I think Darnold is unfortunately still considered a product of Gase. So I think maybe that sort of disdain for Gase kind of rubbed off onto Darnold. And so now that both are gone, the stain of Adam Gase is gone per se. And now I think people are ready to move on to whatever comes next.
Tyler, thanks for jumping on with us so quick and a turnaround from the news yesterday. Really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Tony.
You got it. Tyler Greenewalt, Jets Wire, offshoot of USA Today on our Progressive guest line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Yeah, it's kind of curious. We NFL fans, we kind of pride ourselves, if you've been following the league for a long time, of kind of like understanding the game and understanding a little bit of what it takes. And sometimes we'll take a player and we say, well, it's not really on him. It's also this. It's also that. It's also coordinator. It's all right. So it's not like all the losses don't fall on his shoulders. There's a whole bunch of blame to go around. So there's a little mixture of both. No matter what team you root for, you've probably had a player or two where you said, you know, it's not all his fault. He's still a talented guy, but in the end, you got to move on. But again, when you're a quarterback in this league, you've got to at least find ways to win games that you shouldn't win, the games that you have to win when everything falls apart. And they didn't do that. They were a bad organization from that perspective. You got to win enough games to pull your team out of a position where it's so tempting to go get one of the new blood that's coming into the league. I mean, in the end, Darnold and the Jets played to a season in which Darnold had the team now picking number two overall with the crop of talent that's coming through. Yeah, they're put yourself in a position where you're drafting like 11th, 13th, 14th, where you're not worried about that kind of thing. But if you get your team in the top five, yeah, you could be looking at a change at that very position. All right, our thanks to Tyler Greenewalt at JetsWire. Hey, let me tell you about Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. Freol gets rid of the rusted nuts and bolts, frees up all sorts of ball joints, exhaust manifold, frozen brake cables, threaded pipe connectors, you name it. It delivers three times more lubricant, so it's going to take some less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. It's also body shop safe, so that means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, and it's silicone free. Give Freol Deep Penetrating Oil a try, and you'll be pleased with the performance. So again, whether you've got that rusty chain, corroded U-bolt, axle nut removal, something that needs to be freed up, use Freol Deep Penetrating Oil, available at the shelves of any AutoZone, O'Reilly, Knapp Auto Parts, available at select Walmart stores. Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. Give it a try. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. So, you know, it's Augusta time now. Head over to the Masters.
Yep.
Augusta National.
Time to switch gears.
Dinner tonight. Dustin Johnson got a Caesar salad, house salad, pigs in a blanket appetizer. Got filet mignon, miso marinated sea bass, spring vegetables, mashed potatoes, and peach cobbler and apple pie, I think.
Not too shabby.
It's not bad, but it's not crazy.
Yeah.
Right? It's not Sandy Lyle serving haggis in 1989 crazy.
Well, you got to go with what your theme is, right?
Yeah. You know what the coolest dinner was? 2011. Phil Mickelson was the champion in 2010, and he served Seve's last meal in honor of Seve, who had passed away the year before.
Mm.
So he got Seve's last champion's dinner, and they recreated that. Phil was a big, big Seve guy. He was a Seve Ballesteros. So that was pretty cool. Tiger Woods did the cheeseburgers and fries thing with milkshakes and when he won his first one.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was a kid.
Yeah. Jordan's probably Peak, the Texas barbecue.
Be honest with you, he probably sat there and was like, yeah, let's do In-N-Out.
Yeah, right.
You know, being a California kid, Tiger Woods probably like, let's do an In-N-Out. And people were like, oh, no, this is Augusta.
No, we have chefs here. We'll be making the food. If In-N-Out wants to give us the recipe,
right,
we'll be doing that. Yeah.
I don't know what I would do.
Like here's the cool, like, my mother makes the best lasagna in the world. I'm like, I could eat my mom's lasagna every day. She's just delicious. I want it all the time when I go visit. So if I won the Masters, I would want my mom's lasagna, but they would not let her cook it.
Obviously.
They would go, what what is it that you do with this lasagna? And my mother would have to give the recipe up, which she probably wouldn't, but never, you know, I don't know. Maybe she would. If I won the Masters, I hope she would. But that would be, you know, that would be cool because you'd have, you have, they bring in some of the best chefs around to cook this meal. So, you know, that filet mignon that Dustin Johnson is serving, it is perfect medium rare.
Oh, it's yeah, it's the type of meat that you don't chew.
Right. It's just like butter. It's like the best food. Right?
I know.
Peach cobbler. I mean, for the love of Pete, you're in Georgia. I mean, get something. You can get peach cobbler in every corner in Augusta.
I know. Where do they get the peaches from?
Get something. Challenge the chefs at Augusta National with something amazing. You know what would be cool? If you made up something and have them like searching all over for
right.
it. It's just like, when I was in Baku in Azerbaijan, I had this incredible duck dish and they're scrambling and they can't find it.
Do you think
they start sweating? You keep asking how it's going.
Do you think the Augusta chefs went, did he just say pigs in a blanket?
No, pigs in a blanket.
Really? I mean, okay.
Dustin Johnson, I want pigs in a blanket. Is that hot dog? Is it sausage? What is that? Pigs in a blanket. That's awesome. Well done, DJ.
Step it up like rolled venison.
Right. Well done, Dustin Johnson. Master starts Thursday. It's Wake Up Call.